Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope all is good with you and yours. Thank you very much indeed for being here. As always, we're heading into a weekend where we've got a home game against Fulham. We're sitting top of the table. And while you don't take anything for granted in this league, we saw what Fulham did against Liverpool, for example. You have to look at it, given the way we're playing, as a good chance to get four wins in a row and stay top of the table, which is kind of where I would like us to stay, well, basically until May. Sure, it's far-fetched. Yes, there's a long way to go, but goddammit, a man can dream this early in the season. You can't take that away from me with all your so-called realism and facts and, you know, things. We're also heading into the final few days of the transfer window. The deadline is September 1st at 11 p.m. So it could be quite a busy few days, not just for Arsenal. We're hoping that there's going to be an incoming deal, maybe two, who knows? There's talk of wingers and all sorts, and some players still have their futures to sort out. But I think it's going to be a bit of a crazy one in general. I think the market is going to be fairly busy. So between the Sky Sports countdown thing, which actually, you know, 3 weeks ago I was in a bar and they had Sky Sports on the television and they were talking about transfers or whatever. Sky Sports News was on and it said countdown to transfer deadline, and it was like 27 days, 13 hours, 12 minutes and 4 seconds, 3 seconds, 2, yeah, 27 days. I mean, come on, there's a point where you should put a countdown on. That seems reasonable, let's say even a week, but 27 days, oh Jesus. Anyway, between them and Fabrizio Romano with his here we go and all the rest of it, it could well be a busy few days. We will, of course, cover that on the website, anything Arsenal related, of course. And should we bring in a new player, then we will do all the usual bits and pieces in terms of profiles and podcasts and all that stuff. So stay tuned. Right, let's get on with the show today and to talk about the various bits and pieces being top transfers and all the rest. First up, Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Good afternoon.
And James Benge, hello to you.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
James, how long did it take for the Saliba tequila earworm to get out of your head this week, and why is it back in it right now?
Yeah, thank you. I was going to say thank you for nothing. It is right back in my head. I was staying at my parents' and immediately raided the liquor cabinet and had a couple of margaritas. It was a really good Saturday.
I did exactly the same thing on Sunday. I had an overwhelming urge for tequila/tequila-based drinks, and I had to go out on Sunday and have some Mexican food and have some tequila. I think there's an untapped market there, Andrew, for the Arsenal marketing team to get in there. Someone actually sent me a message. I can't remember where it was. Like, I get some like email or direct message on Twitter or Instagram or something, but there is apparently a brand of tequila called Arsenal.
Is there?
Yeah.
So, I know that Mikel Silvestre makes rum these days. Maybe we could have a word with him and get him to make some tequila instead.
Wow. Yeah, maybe I'll give that one a pass, if you don't mind.
I could see the tumbleweed there.
Yeah, it's actually, I've got it up here. It's tequilaarsenal.com. It's 100% agave. So maybe that's something that the club need to look into very, very rapidly, because that feels like an organic sort of. I've just sent you the link there. You can have a look at it. Look at it. Arsenal tequila.
Far more responsible than cryptocurrency, right?
Well, yeah. At least you get something out of it, even if it is, you know, a blackout and a hangover the next day and possibly the fear. But, you know, at least it's something rather than a token.
They've got one in blue, though. I don't like that. A Chelsea blue, one of the bottles. I mean, what are they thinking?
The Arsenal away blue in a season where we wore blue away and it was quite good. I don't know. Like the Patrick Vieira goal at Anfield blue, maybe that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That was a good goal. James, start to the season perfect from a points perspective for Arsenal. Nobody else has got 9 points from 9.
As always, though, when you see the discourse online and stuff, it's always, you know, there's always something. And it's because Arsenal haven't played anyone good yet. They haven't really been tested. I take exception to that because I do think Crystal Palace away from home is a pretty stern test and will be a stern test. And look, we know Leicester, and we know Leicester aren't probably where they want to be and maybe aren't as solid as they used to be. Bournemouth, seeing the Championship next year, guys, and I'll take that as okay. But, you know, I think it's been impressive because, you know, ultimately all you can do is play what's in front of you and beat what's in front of you. And many times Arsenal have played teams like this and beaten themselves in many ways.
And I think also it's about how you beat those teams in front of you. Look, you know, I know we all do enjoy joking about title challenges, and who knows how much of a joke that will sound in 6 or 7 games' time. I think probably still a bit of a joke. But, you know, there's, and I don't think we can say, sort of say off the back of 3 games, a title challenge or anything is on, but I think you can kind of infer some stuff about what Arsenal might be able to do across 38 games, across the course of a season, in how they've gone about collecting these 3 points. Completely agree with you that Crystal Palace, that's a tough game. They've obviously shown that against Liverpool as well, and I'm sure they will show that against other teams. But you know, when you come to play the poorer teams in the league, there's a lot to be said for just beating them up, taking their lunch money, winning quite convincingly. It's something Arsenal didn't do last season. I know everyone has sort of said on this pod and elsewhere, one of the challenges Arteta had in terms of rotating the squad, giving someone like Nketiah minutes early in the season, was that Arsenal were forever 2-1 up, and the obvious change was Rob Holding to cling on to the lead. Hardly seen hide nor hair of him because he's not needed. Arsenal are getting in comfortable positions, and that says a lot, because if you're a team that beat Bournemouth 3-0, if you're a team that put 4 past Leicester, you kind of have to infer from that that you're a team that's capable of beating a lot of the sort of Premier League middle classes, for want of a better term. And those teams tend to do quite well. It's why Chelsea finished 3rd last season. I think probably, I haven't looked at the numbers, but my feeling would be it's where Tottenham had an edge in the back ends of last season. And of course, it's basically where Arsenal's top 4 bid really, when you take a step back and look at it, it fell apart because they couldn't beat Brighton, they couldn't beat Palace, they couldn't beat Southampton. Maybe they won't be able to beat Brighton anymore because they're a really good team. But if you can kind of, you know, take 12 points from 12 from this run of 4 games, that's Champions League form.
Andrew, the style issue, I think, is a really interesting point, because last season there were times where we played some decent stuff. And I think, you know, under Mikel Arteta, I've been waiting for it to go somewhere else, because I always found it hard to think that a guy who grew up in Spain at Barcelona, who played for Arsene Wenger, who worked with Pep Guardiola, didn't want a team that attacked well. You know, I think he's found it hard to build that team. But what we're seeing this season is a step forward in terms of what this team can produce. And I think part of why we feel excited isn't just that we're winning the games or we've won those 3 games. It's, as James said, how we've won them and the potential. You know, we could have scored more against Bournemouth. We could potentially have scored more against Leicester as well. Palace, I think, was a little more of a challenge because of the way that game went. But there is something about the way this team is playing and how these individuals are connecting and meshing and the kind of football that Arsenal are capable of, which feels more Arsenal, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, it took a long time to throw off the shackles of the horseshoe football, didn't it, where we just sort of played in that big arc around the box and waited for cutbacks. Now there's a sort of a freedom about the way some of the guys are playing, and, you know, you look at the some of the tippy-tappy football on the edge of the box, and it's kind of, you know, it's electric. I mean, it's exactly what we've wanted for a long, long time. It's very exciting. I mean, it's football that you pay to watch. And I think at the moment, I don't know about you, but the gap between games feels very, very long at the moment. You know, I'm desperate for the next one. I just want it to come. I want that next hit. Obviously, I know that, you know, we're in a particularly good moment, and the start of the season has, I still think the start of the season has been friendly. I know it was Crystal Palace away, but, you know, you look at those 3 teams and you think I'd want 9 points there, in the same way that I looked at you know, the start last year, and I feared the worst because I knew that, you know, Brentford might be difficult in those two big games against Chelsea and City. But we're in a really good place at the moment. I'm really kind of just enjoying the whole vibe, you know, everything that's kind of filtering down from the terraces onto the pitch. It's just the best it's been in a long, long time. And I just feel like I want to embrace it. You know, I can be, you know, realistic, pessimistic, call it what you like. And I have been over the years. But right now, I kind of feel like in being optimistic and enjoying it as much as I can, that's feeding into the general vibe. And I think the players are feeding off that as well.
So the Andrew Allen glass is half full is what you're saying right now.
Right now, yeah, half full of tequila.
That is a dangerously half full glass, I can say that. James, the point about the games and the gap between the games, you know, I get completely what Andrew is saying, because when you have this kind of feeling, you have this momentum, you just want the next one to come around. And to be fair, they're going to start doing that. There's a midweek game coming up as well. And then we're going into the realms of Premier League, Europa League, Thursday, Sunday. And at the moment, Mikel Arteta has a very settled team. You know, a team that's starting games and winning games and playing in a way which means, you know, they deserve to start the next game. But there will come a point where you have to consider how you get the best out of your squad and how you maximize the depth of your squad. So it's quite weird to think that, like, the players that have done so well, one or two or maybe three or four, might have to sit down for a game and miss out a game. I know the Europa League gives you a chance to rotate a little bit, but how do you see that going for Mikel Arteta? Because last season he didn't really have a great deal of depth, and so he was picking basically, you know, the same team. The only options were, like, was it Lacazette or Nketiah up front, and then it just became Nketiah because Lacazette fell out of favour. The only other option he had then was Smith Rowe or Martinelli, and everything else kind of picked itself. Whereas I think this season he has got to be mindful of, like, making sure that when he is making changes and making sure that when his squad is, you know, as fresh as it can be for a game every 3 days or 4 days, whatever it is, that these guys are ready to come in and perform and maybe sort of try and prove something to him that, like, if I play well in this game, I want to play the next one.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I think one of the interesting things is this is probably the first season where we've seen Arteta with, obviously we know, we've talked about the sort of profile of the squad, but also just the size of the squad he wants. You know, that first full season, remember, was the one where players weren't being named in the Premier League and Europa League squad. Mm. That's really tough to manage from an interpersonal perspective. But then, you know, the squad was clearly too small even for a season out of Europe in the second half of last season. It's going to be all the more difficult considering, you know, and I know this well as someone that kind of works on the Champions League, Europa League bandwagon. This will all be done by early November. It is a period that can, you know, will radically alter some team seasons, because this is going to be tough on the legs, really, maybe even tougher than when we come out of the World Cup, just purely, you know, specifically for Arsenal. By the time this goes out and people listen to it, I suspect we'll have the Europa League draw. I'm assuming that Carabag will be one of the teams in that group stage. There will be somewhere else.
Somewhere far away.
Really, you know, I remember talking to people at Arsenal a few years back that were sort of saying, you know, even compared to the sort of Wednesday, Saturday of Champions League, normally, you know, if you're doing Wednesday, Saturday, you'd be going to Paris or Barcelona or somewhere else, you know, nearby Western Europe, comfortable getting there, doesn't take too long. But Thursday, Sunday, going to Azerbaijan or going to the back of beyond, it's really tough on the legs. I think the squad looks to me just about them, a little bit short without that extra winger. But it feels like numbers-wise, it can cope at the moment. But we kind of have to remember that Reece Nelson is the only player with any real injury at the moment. It's going to be a stretch. I think the numbers are okay to keep everyone sort of happy in terms off the pitch, but it one or two injuries, this squad looks really different. You can say that about pretty much any Premier League squad, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for Arsenal, that's for sure.
We did see Reece Nelson back in training today.
I think he's just back on the pitch. Yeah. I think he's sort of back working out.
I mean, do you think his level of backness, does it still preclude a move away from the club? Because it feels like, along with, let's say, Maitland-Niles, that he, you know, given his contractual situation, I don't know if they've got the same thing going on with Nelson as they do with Maitland-Niles, this extra thing. It is basically his final year. Like, is this not the time to move him on? Like, the injury, it looked like it was going to scupper that, but maybe if it's only a two-week injury from now, you know, there might be a club out there that could take a chance?
Kind of from what I was told, it was actually never Nelson's plan to go in the summer. I think, you know, obviously Arsenal would be looking to collect a fee from him. I think from his perspective, unless the right, you know, if the right club comes along, everything changes. But that right club hadn't kind of emerged when this injury came up. So his view was there will be minutes to be got at Arsenal. We know that Mikel Arteta really likes Reece Nelson as a player, even if he hasn't managed to get the best out of him. And I think his view was to just assess his options again in January, where obviously, you know, suddenly he can sign a pre-contract agreement and the club that's signing him don't have to worry quite as much about a transfer fee. And obviously that's only outside England. That was his plan, you know, use the minutes that were available at Arsenal. I think it now does look like he will get some time, maybe in the Europa League. So probably hasn't changed that much. And I don't think there are clubs queuing around the block for him, sadly. That might change if he plays well in the Europa League and if they're not having to pay a transfer fee.
But yeah, I think he's being optimistic, to be honest, about the amount of minutes he might get. You know, even if Nicolas Pepe is going to go, and we'll touch on him in a moment. But the big transfer story this week is Pedro Neto from Wolves, an exciting winger that we've been after for quite some time. Phil Costa dug up a story that we'd done on Arsblog News in 2017 when he was at Braga. A very exciting player, and it sort of fits into more or less what you think Mikel Arteta wants. Even if he is primarily left-sided, he is an attacking player. Maybe not quite the backup for Bukayo Saka that we might have thought, but any thoughts on that deal?
Obviously we need to find the money to do it. I think Wolves are going to probably play hardball, especially going into the final week. As a player, he's really interesting. I was watching a few videos of him. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Mark Overmars. He's got a kind of roadrunner style. He likes to sort of squeeze through gaps that don't appear to be there. I don't know that he necessarily is as clinical in front of goal as Overmars was, who, you know, at times was quite prolific. But, you know, there's obviously a sort of element of pace about him. You know, the fact that he maybe plays a bit on the left, I mean, he plays kind of all over, really. I mean, he's quite versatile, I think, in that respect. And I guess we've seen Vieira maybe playing slightly towards the right side of things. In that 145-minute cameo he had in the under-21s, whether or not they're starting to think maybe he could be a bit more right-sided, and maybe in that respect you start to look at someone who might play slightly on the other side. I think it's really interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, we've spent all summer flirting with upgrading something on the wing, and Rafinha was the first target, obviously, at one point, and this is where we are now. There've been a couple of other names sort of tentatively mentioned, that Jeremy Pino fella of Villarreal, who's what, 19. I saw Fabrizio Romano saying that we were interested in Moussa Diaby, but that seems a bit kind of like probably out of our reach. But I mean, it's pretty clear that this is a position that Arteta is desperate to upgrade. So I mean, let's just see if we go all in on it. I'm still sort of scratching my head a little bit about how we find the money.
Right. We'll come to that. Because yeah, we have spent a lot, but look, from what Mikel Arteta said after the game against Bournemouth, James, it was quite interesting, wasn't it? Like, you go to Bournemouth, you turn them over, you win 3-0, you could easily have won 4 or 5-0, probably deserved to win by that kind of margin. And afterwards, the manager is talking about more firepower. I mean, and like some might say, well, that's being a bit greedy, but it does speak to, you know, what he's really trying to do. And I feel like, you know, because I reckon, and you can give me your thoughts on this yourself, we're seeing some things starting to happen in the market, like Alexander Isak going to Newcastle. This final week of the market, I think, is going to be a bit mental, because Manchester United are going to make moves to try and counter their terrible start to the season, even if they beat Liverpool on Monday. Similarly, Liverpool have got midfield issues. Yeah, Chelsea, we know, are trying to buy literally everybody that exists, you know, who's ever worn a pair of boots. I think this last part of the market is going to be a bit mad, but from an Arsenal point of view, you know, you look at the squad and you can feel pretty content. You don't look at it and think, I'm scared about this or that. You know, there is obviously room for more depth and more quality in pretty much every squad that you think of. But, you know, I don't have that sense of dread going into games. I feel like we're well prepared as a squad going into games. But another signing, whether it's Neto or whether there's another mystery player out there, you know, that Arsenal are keeping under wraps like Fabio Vieira, who knows? But it would kind of feel like an icing on the cake signing in a way after the business that we've done between last summer and this summer and where we are now, that even if there are other clubs making moves, and there's always a bit of envy, isn't there? Transfer envy is like, oh, they're buying him. Why can't we buy him? We should buy him. You know, all of that goes on. But it feels to me like they're looking for something just to really cap off what has been a good window so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is that winger position, because or the wide forward, however you kind of want to term it, because I think, especially in this era of five subs, I think they can probably see that this could be a deal that if the right player comes in and he can make an immediate impact, he can maybe swing in a more direct way. He can swing you a few extra points that get you into the Champions League. And look, Arsenal are not, you know, everyone I speak to says Arsenal are not letting themselves think in that way they did in Unai Emery's reign, where it's, God, if we can just get this one player, he'll get us into the Champions League and we'll deal with everything then.
Mm.
But I also think that they're sort of cognizant of how close they are, and that getting a good squad player, which is what I would think Neto is. I mean, by the way, like anyone that watches Wolves often, I mean, first of all, pity for you because they're a horrible team to watch, but they'll tell you that Wolves are that Neto is the sort of standout attacking player in that team, and I think would offer an awful lot of value, though, you know, as Andrew says, that comes at a price. Yeah, I think there's a real chance to take a big leap forward with that one signing, whoever it might be, and, you know, value to be obtained as well as spent. I guess the challenge is when you kind of run down that squad and say, how do I fund this purchase? And again, don't want to dive too much into the money, but there's not a huge amount beyond Ainsley Maitland-Niles that's going to earn you a sizable sum. And I mean, Maitland-Niles, you're probably talking, I know that West Ham and Southampton are in for him, but even then you're not going to get a huge amount, maybe not more than 10 million for Maitland-Niles. And someone does have to pay for this somewhere, but our generous overlords have clearly seen the error of their ways in recent years and are prepared to bankroll Arsenal back to the Champions League.
Well, whether it's bankroll or bank loan or whatever it might be, we might talk about that in a couple of minutes' time. But, you know, a player who is making way for the potential arrival of Neto or whoever it might be, Andrew, is Nicolas Pepe. And at the time of recording, he hasn't yet completed his move, his loan move to Nice. But that looks like it is going to go ahead. How do you assess Nicolas Pepe at Arsenal? Is he unfortunate in a way to have come in with that kind of price tag and that level of expectation that comes with that? And like, I think everybody has said, like, he didn't pay for himself. He didn't put the price on him. Arsenal are the ones who paid that money, et cetera, et cetera. But also maybe unfortunate in that he wasn't the player that Unai Emery wanted, because we know Unai Emery wanted Wilfried Zaha. He wasn't a player that Mikel Arteta trusted, because even when he finished well in his first season under Mikel Arteta and played a very good part in us winning the FA Cup, his form towards the end of that season, and he was really, really good in the final, it wasn't enough to convince Mikel Arteta that you shouldn't bring in Willian from Chelsea, a guy who plays in exactly that position. And then on top of that, the emergence of Bukayo Saka, to me anyway, appears to be, or maybe has been, the greatest impediment to Nicolas Pepe succeeding at Arsenal beyond whatever issues Mikel Arteta has had with him. Like, the emergence of Saka meant that Pepe was always going to be riding the bench. So like a conflation of things where, you know, I can see that there are flaws in this player. I can understand why there isn't a great deal of trust, but obviously there's talent there. We've seen some brilliant performances. We've seen some incredible goals, but just wrong club at the wrong time, it feels like, in many ways.
Yeah, and maybe wrong style of football as well when he first came in. You know, as I mentioned earlier, the horseshoe football didn't really suit a guy who, you know, has a lot of pace and probably could have been played inside channels and racing onto balls. Instead, he found himself with a lot of defenders in front of him. And while he's got quality to kind of cut in on his left foot, it became a little bit of a one-trick pony, but without the kind of Mahrez quality at the end of it. Mm. He just wasn't really consistent enough. And I think, you know, with the changeover in the manager, Arteta came in and looked at a guy who I don't think he saw as being capable to impose the pressing game as diligently as he wanted. And ultimately, I think he just felt, yeah, as you said earlier or inferred earlier, that maybe he just didn't trust him. He's a very shy guy, quite introverted. I don't think he's really been able to maybe impose himself as a personality on the squad. I don't think he's come across as a particularly confident guy in the entire time that he's been at the club. And those kind of sort of softer factors can obviously take a toll on the pitch. I mean, he's undoubtedly a very, very talented guy. He's got incredible feet. He's got a great shot. And I think actually, if he goes back to France, there's a fairly high chance, if he can find his mojo, that he'll do very well for Nice. I think it's the right thing to do to get him off the books. Slightly surprised to hear that there won't be any kind of option or anything to buy him. It sounds as though he's just going to be, as you used in the blog today, the dry loan. So we're kind of just kicking the can down the road, aren't we? I mean, he's got a contract till 2024. Presumably this time next year, we'll be back in the same situation.
I mean, is the best case scenario, James, is that Nicolas Pepe has an absolutely brilliant season at Nice, that, you know, we can talk about Arsenal finding it difficult to move on players who are, you know, underperforming or perceived as damaged goods or whatever that is. And there might be something to say for that. But from an Arsenal perspective, like, I mean, we had an option on the Lucas Torreira loan and that didn't work out. So sometimes an option is just like, it's almost like an enticement for the club that you're sending the player on loan to, that if he does well and you want to keep him, then you have that option there. It seems to be more for that club than the club who owns the player in inverted commas in the first place. But the best thing, it strikes me, that in the absence of anyone coming along and giving us money this summer, if Pepe has a storming season in France, scores a lot of goals, his stock rises, he's got a year left on his contract, it might be a case that this time next year, while it could easily be another problem, if he's done well, he comes back and there might be clubs out there who say, you know what, we could get him at a relatively knockdown price, we'll pay actual money for him. something which I know and I'm sure Arsenal would be delighted to receive.
I would like to think so, but I'm really doubtful that will happen because, you know, Lucas Torreira had a barnstorming season in Serie A, as you said, and he was a player that Fiorentina really wanted to sign. They just would not pay the money because clubs think they can lowball Arsenal. And this obviously has been a summer where we've seen quite a bit of Edu saying, no, we're not, you know, saying to Fiorentina, well, we're not taking less from you than your option. And to an extent, even if you get less money for Torreira than Fiorentina might have been offering, you kind of have made a little bit of a point, a little bit. And certainly that was their view, that like, we're not going to negotiate with you. We already have done that. With Pepe, though, I think even if he does have a great season, and I've got no reason to doubt he'll do a lot better in Ligue 1, although Nice are struggling early on in the season. You know, even if he does, he comes back with a year on his contract, probably with most of the interest coming from France and the rest of Europe, where there won't be much money still, certainly not to take on a player on Pepe's wages. And I just feel like more sacrifices will have to be made. I mean, just picking up on one thing Andrew was mentioning there about kind of how he's settled in. I do think you know, a lot of people on social media kind of have said, cut Pepe slack, and I think they're right to. But I think one thing that we've maybe forgotten is just how sort of trying the circumstances around the whole of London and the country were, and that we forget you know, there's this, the Arsenal specific stuff that he had three coaches in his first 3 or 4 months. But also, you know, I think we kind of need to remember what life has been like for people from abroad living in the United Kingdom, or, you know, people from the United Kingdom living in France over the last few years, cut off from their family. I know that, you know, for Pepe, that's something he will have felt really strongly. And I think that was really tough. I was just looking back at it right before the pandemic started. He was starting to find form. I think there was like 2 goals against Newcastle, an assist against Everton. And then he comes back and, you know, the world has changed. And there were quite a few moments like that on the pitch as well, you know, finding form right at the end of that first season in the FA Cup final. And then he comes back, and, as you said, Willian. I think we kind of all forget how tough it is. And, you know, maybe we could have done with seeing Pepe in All or Nothing, how tough it is for these young guys away from home, even more so now. So, yeah, I mean, I hope it goes well for him on a personal level as well, because I think these have been 3 pretty rough years for him.
Yeah, I get that. And I was, you know, I'm sort of listening to the audio book of Carlo Ancelotti's, I think it's called Quiet Leadership, or whatever, something like that. And it's really interesting. He talks in quite broad terms about some of the jobs that he's had, but in specific terms about the way he likes to operate and the sort of how important it is to build relationships with players, and you can only get the best out of them when you build relationships. And I'd be absolutely fascinated to know to what extent Mikel Arteta and Nicolas Pepe have worked together or tried to do things, you know, at what point it became clear between the two of them, Andrew, that maybe this was there was an incompatibility or whatever. You know, it must be very difficult when you realize that the coach or the manager doesn't really have a great deal of faith in you, or you're only being thrown on when you're chasing a game, and when you're thrown on when you're trying to protect a game and you give away a silly free kick against Aston Villa last season and the coach goes nuts. You know, there is something to the idea that to actually perform at a good level, you need some measure of trust and faith from your manager, some measure of continuity, some measure of regularity in your football. And some will say, well, that's down to you to work hard and get in the team and stay in the team. But just sometimes it's really difficult to do that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a personality thing there. I mean, you look at someone like a Martin Odegaard and you go, that looks like a guy who'll get on with Mikel Arteta. You sometimes look around some of the squad at some of the other players and think, well, that might not be the type of person I would say that he would be a close friend of. I mean, I thought it was really interesting when he came back from, going back to Pepe, like when he came back from the African Cup of Nations, and Arteta made a big song and dance about the fact that he felt the player had come back super motivated, right? You know, it was almost as if he'd had a bit of a reset. He'd gone away. He'd actually had the opportunity to play some football, played well, came back, obviously carried that kind of motivation into training, came off the bench against Wolves, scored a goal, played a part in that Lacazette/own goal winner. And you thought, okay, maybe Nicola Pepe's got an opportunity to kind of play a bigger part in the running than we thought, like he's done previously. That just did not happen. I mean, that was really an outlier in terms of opportunities for him. And yeah, as you said, I mean, the very rare occasion that he did come on, you just sort of constantly felt like he was almost fretting on the pitch that he might do something wrong, that, you know, he just wasn't able to kind of get into the groove again. And, you know, at that part of the season when everything is so, so tense as a manager, you just can't afford to carry people if you think when you put them on that they might be overthinking things. And ultimately, you know, a combination of those factors led to him just being benched. And I think at that point, by the time the summer came round, it looked really, really difficult for him to kind of rehabilitate things, despite, you know, that teasing, flirting tweet that, or whatever it was, social media message that he sent out at one point. suggesting that he was kind of ready and motivated. It's a shame. I think, you know, as I said before, everybody, you know, he's a great player. And I think everybody was very, very excited when he joined. You know, there was a moment there where it really felt like, you know, we're putting a, you know, stake in the ground and saying, this is who, you know, we're going big here. We're going to try and get back into the Champions League. And it really hasn't played out that way at all for him.
No. For all concern, it just is a deal that really didn't work, apart from, you know, perhaps Lille making quite a lot of money on the deal, and maybe some other people too. Just on the squad in general then, and the difficulties that Arsenal have had, you referenced these, James, you know, being unable to sell players and finding things like the Torreira Fiorentina thing. It must be immensely frustrating when you agree a 15 million euro option and the player does really well and they say, that would give you half of that. You know, that's got to be quite frustrating. But and I think you're right to an extent, even though Arsenal got less from Galatasaray, they couldn't just sort of cave in to Fiorentina, because I think the perception out there is that Arsenal are a bit of a soft touch when it comes to moving players on. I absolutely agree and understand that there are market issues at play. There isn't a great deal of money across Europe. Arsenal and other Premier League clubs as well, not just Arsenal, find it difficult to move players on to the continent because, you know, those money issues exist. But how do Arsenal change that perception of being a club that will go a long way to facilitate the departure of players they don't want, even if financially it's not to their best ends, if that makes sense?
In terms of sort of changing how you're perceived as a selling club, I think to an extent it probably ends up comes down to selling players that the market as a whole, not one or two teams, but sort of the market as a whole really want. And we kind of, when we talk about developing this young squad, I think we often know without saying that a moment is kind of coming down the line when a player that you have bought, maybe you've bought, like, this is entirely hypothetical. I'm like, do I actually say this? But entirely hypothetically, let's say Gabriel Martinelli. Let's say that he is a player, entirely hypothetically, I'm saying it, yeah, exclamation marks.
Underlined.
You know, a particularly wealthy club, a PSG, a Manchester City or whoever, that they come in and go for them. These are the deals that, you know, European football is watching, is talking about. And I think that's where your people's view of you can change. And the truth is, Arsenal haven't done that. Arsenal haven't done very many deals that make you sort of, that really dictate the market, that, you know, kind of going back to the era where Vieira and Henri were wanted every summer and Arsenal stood firm and eventually got a very high price. And I think actually people had the sense that trying to buy a player off David Dean was like pulling teeth, in the same way they would tell you now about Daniel Levy. Like, you change your reputation as a seller when you're selling someone you don't necessarily want to, or that you're trying to extract maximum value for. I think every club in the world, even now someone like Chelsea, have developed a reputation as they can't shift. I mean, maybe the only exception would be Liverpool. But Liverpool's fringe players are fringe players in winning environments. Same with City. You know, when you're a squad that is in the top four or even higher, then everyone will look at that group of players and go, well, you know, the second best striker at Manchester City, he must be quite good. Who's this reserve left back they've got? you know, let's take a look at him. I think really it comes down to a mixture of selling well when you know, when the big money deals at the market is looking at happen, but also just having good players. You can't sell Lucas Torreira feels harsh, but you can't sell him because he's not in a winning environment.
Sure.
Like, I mean, if you do a title challenge, people will be interested in Mo Elneny if you extend his contract by a year.
Yeah, the 50 million Mohamed Elneny deal will put everything right, and we'll all bow down at the barbecue of Edu and say, well done. I mean, Andrew, it does strike me that, like, I get the complaints and I get why people are concerned, because Arsenal are spending a lot of money without bringing a lot of money in, and that is a situation which has consequences and ramifications and all of those kinds of things. Like, maybe the idea that, like, can we actually afford to buy Pedro Neto? Can we really push the boat out that far? You know, maybe it's not such a big issue if you've managed to get 25 million for Nicolas Pepe and 10 million for Maitland-Niles and, you know, that 15 million for Lucas Torreira and everything else. But on the flip side, I'm convinced that the next big sale we make will produce a lot of complaints, because it's going to be a player who is good. It's going to be a player that we like. And that in itself is going to cause a little bit of angst.
Yeah, I think you can mitigate that by planning ahead. You know, you look at players who may end up being sellable assets, and you start to bring in people behind them that can fill in the gaps, and you get ahead of the situation, which we have not done for quite a few years, because we didn't have, I guess, well, in the last 5 years, the continuity necessary in the management setup to be able to kind of plan more than, you know, 6 months in advance. So, yeah, I think you have to get ahead of the situation. I mean, I'm looking now at a sort of spreadsheet with the contract situation of players for 2023, right? And the ones that will be out will be Bellerin, who we expect will probably go at some point this summer on loan, at least. Maitland-Niles, Nelson, and Elneny will have an option to extend for a year. But we're getting to a point now where we have to worry about things 2 years in advance, not 6 months in advance. And that's a good situation. I can easily see us getting to, you know, a situation where someone like a Gabriel, you know, the defender Gabriel might be a very wanted target, right? You know, he's a very solid center back, very, very athletic, powerful. He's got all the attributes to go to a very high level. And we've also got two really good center backs in the team, you know, whether it's Saliba, Ben White, what have you. But that's where you start to go, okay, well, if we did lose one, we've still got two really good guys, and we could use that money to reinvest and kind of work other areas around the team as well. I mean, the strange thing for me right now is trying to get into my head that we're not really working the way that we did under Arsene, right? We're not working with a self-sustained model. We don't necessarily have to, you know, spend the money that we get in. So maybe we don't have to sell players as in the way that we did for a period there when the stadium was being paid off, you know, at the very early stages. I know we're still paying off the stadium, but yeah, I mean, it's really just about getting ahead of the situation. I the fact that there's so much kind of unknown about where the money is coming from at the moment, it makes me uncomfortable. But at the same time, I'm also very aware that someone inside the club is looking at a spreadsheet with all of the numbers on it, whereas I'm looking at a spreadsheet with none of the numbers on it. They must know what they're doing. And if the authorities, the Premier League or, you know, UEFA aren't actually stamping down on them, you'd imagine that we're doing things within the rules and therefore everything's relatively controlled. Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes hard to kind of let go and just assume that you trust people, because for the last few years, some of the people running the club haven't necessarily made the best decisions.
Well, yes. Financially, do you have concerns, James? Because, you know, there have been issues and worries about KSE and the Cronkies down the years. And they, I think, probably a little, what's the word I'm looking for here? They've sort of glossed over a period where they were in control of the club.
Yeah.
But have sort of reshaped the narrative, to use that horrible expression, to make it sound like, well, until we had 100% of the club, you know, you can only really judge us since then. And I don't think that's true. But clearly, since they have had 100% control, a lot of money has been spent. And you think about big deals for Nicolas Pepe. That summer when we bought Pepe and Saliba and Kieran Tierney, and then there was the 50 million release clause on Thomas Partey, and then there was 30 million on Gabriel. Then we had last summer where we spent 150 million. We've had another big net spend summer this time around as well. Gabriel Jesus, Zinchenko, Fabio Vieira, Matt Turner, Marquinhos has come in, and we're looking at maybe spending another 40, 50, 55, who knows, on whatever it'll take to get whatever winger we're bringing in.
And the wages as well. I mean, like, the wages went mad for a while.
Yeah, I mean, and I do think that they've probably worked the wage bill in a way. Like, I think there's a lot of the big earners, the big earners are gone. I mean, you know, when you're bringing in someone like Gabriel Jesus, that's a guy who's going to earn a lot of money. But I think they've probably trimmed a lot off that wage bill, which gives you a little more to play around with, of course. Now, I mean, call me Mr. Cynical, if you will, but I do not think that Stan is sitting in, you know, on his ranch, opening up one of his many chests of gold bullion and saying, here you go, guys, you know, take this from my personal savings. The money that Arsenal have spent is money that Arsenal will have to pay back, whether it's to KSE, whether it's to, you know, banks, friendly banks, perhaps. This is money borrowed at favorable rates, if you can call it that. But do you have any concerns that you know, we probably don't have full insight and probably never will have full insight because of the way that the finances work now? They can keep, they've got to register the accounts obviously every year as a limited company, but they don't have to go public with the accounts because there's no shareholders, et cetera, et cetera. So the kind of in-depth look at the finances isn't quite there, even with the best efforts of our good friend Swiss Ramble.
Yeah, and they're not obliged to explain them, which is my way of saying I really miss those AGMs and the rancor and fury. Always seem to happen after three straight defeats. I think it should be cause for concern that Arsenal that we don't know as clearly, that things aren't as out in the open, and that, as you said, you know, we get one set of accounts a year. They're not always as, I don't believe they're as detailed as they used to be. And they certainly could end up very swiftly becoming less detailed. We could find out less. And my expectation is that will be the direction of travel. You know, it was notable, for instance, you know, things like KSE paying off a lot of the debt and converting it into loans that are owed to KSE was, I mean, obviously there's part of you that worries, because I don't think you ever kind of want to be, you know, ideally you don't want to be in debt to anyone. You don't want to be reliant on the whims of Stan and Josh Kroenke. Having said that, you know, it is the sort of thing that a shrewd billionaire with some degree of, I mean, emotional connection feels very loaded, because I think we all have the sense that it's never really been good enough there, you know, the Kroenke's connection, but that someone that, well, they have a stake in it, like,
sure,
in a way that a bank don't, is maybe a better way of framing it. I think that is what you would want a good owner to do. Debt that it is, that goes kind of to the owner at a reasonable interest rate, a lower interest rate than what Arsenal were paying Barclays, I think it was, that the loan was cancelled out for. But I mean, you worry. People, what I've been told this summer is that the way that things have been done this summer is how it's going to happen in the future. That, you know, like Andrew said, we've kind of come out of the era of worrying about balancing the books and paying off the stadium debt, and that there will be money, you know, the exact amount will vary obviously based on all sorts of factors, but that there will be money in the summers to spend, maybe around this sort of level. This is the plan from now on, and this is how Arsenal are going to do things. But it's not a good situation to be in. It's not a good situation for stories to come out that you're on UEFA's FFP watch list. And obviously Arsenal say, look, you know, we've not had any contact from UEFA, and you know, we're very confident that we'll comply with FFP, and I'm sure that will all be fine. Yeah, I worry that there's not quite enough, and that it's hard to get clear messages of where this money's coming from, and get a real sense of what might happen if things hit the fan. Hopefully things don't hit the fan, they get back in the Champions League, and that balances out the books significantly, because look, this club has been struggling without that cash injection year in, year out.
I was just going to say, I mean, obviously we know broadcast revenues continue to go up, especially on the global side of things. You know, that money is coming in, and, you know, this is why we're able to see a West Ham spending 40 million quid here and there. And, you know, you know, that's important. I think we have to remember that money is, that level of money is going up. Commercially, I feel like we're in a situation where we've lost ground on our rivals. There is a bit of me which wonders, given that those two big deals that we have, with Adidas and Emirates are up for a renewal in 2024. So conversations will start to be happening, you know, with those companies. But you have to have a successful team on the pitch to be able to then, you know, persuade them to part with even more money for you to then to be able to keep up on the commercial side of things. So as we are, you know, speculating to accumulate a little bit on the pitch, I imagine maybe there's some of that going on because you know that off it, you're going to benefit as well. But yeah, it's just, there's just lots of unknowns. There's also, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with the Tracy Crouch report and whether anything from that will actually get implemented the way that it was suggested and whether there'll be any more kind of openness and, you know, the allowance of fans on the board and whatnot. It'll be curious to see if that plays out and whether or not that gives us more insight than we have at the moment. But even then, I imagine it'll be a lot of,
yeah. You know,
you're allowed in this room, but you're not allowed in all of those rooms over there.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, you can wait in the hall outside the director's box, but you're not coming in here where we've got the, you know, the caviar and the gold tinted glasses and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, the irony of Arsenal, imagine Arsenal being done for FFP when there's clubs like fucking Man City and PSG and everything else. It'd be absolutely crazy. Very finally, let me ask you each for a prediction between now and the end of the transfer window. It can be to do with Arsenal if you think it's you know, one player coming in and one going out, whatever you reckon. I reckon we'll get one in, and I think Maitland-Niles will go. I think Hector will go towards the end. But I also think we might just get one from the group that isn't quite expected to leave, that might just leave as well before the end of the window. I think this last week of the market could be a bit crazy. What do you reckon, James?
I certainly agree with you that I think we'll get one in, that it'll be a forward. I'm not going to name it because I think Neto is going to be really hard to do. I think it's fair to say that. Like you say, Maitland-Niles will go. Bellerin will go. I would just keep an eye out on whether they might take a couple of flyers, you know, around the £1-2 million level for players to go in the under 23s. Just whispers, I hear. But we shall see if anything happens.
What exactly do you mean? Like a young kid who might come in and then just...
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, they... A lower price point than Chelsea, who've just spent sort of £20 million on two separate players for their youth setup in Chukwuemeka and the guy from Inter Milan.
Mm.
There's a lot of competition there, and a lot of clubs are scouring the lower leagues, including Arsenal, to try and pick up some of these young players at more the sort of, you know, the lower seven figure range. You know, can we get these players in before we're paying, you know, Morgan Gibbs-White money?
Sure.
So wouldn't shock me to see a player or maybe even two players like that arrive that we all get very hyped about and maybe we never hear from, or maybe they're a superstar in 5 years' time.
Oh, we'll hear from them. George Bird will keep us up to date on everything that's going on with those guys, that's for sure. Andrew, what do you reckon?
I think Maitland-Niles, Nelson and Bellerin will all go probably on loan. But obviously just with the knowledge that they will probably never play for the club again.
Mm.
And I think we will recruit someone, but I'm not convinced that we're going to go. I'm not convinced that we're going to end up spending 50 million on a player at this point. I feel like, you know, Arteta seems pretty happy with the way things are going at the moment, and he may be willing to roll the dice a little bit like he did in, you know, January.
Right. Well, we'll wait and see. Uncle Stan is opening his second box of gold bullion as we speak, sending it this way, this side of the Atlantic, for our end of transfer window splurge. Gents, thank you very much indeed. Andrew, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And James Bench, thank you very much as well.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much indeed to Andrew. You'll find him on Twitter. He is at A. Allen Sport, at A. Allen Sport. And James is at James Bench, at James Bench. Right, well, that is just about that for this week's show. Mikel Arteta's press conference takes place Friday morning. I'm recording Thursday evening, so I have no news for you, no team news or anything like that. We will, of course, preview the Fulham game over on Patreon, patreon.com/ @ArsBlog. Lewis and I will look ahead to the Fulham game. We'll have that podcast for you Friday afternoon. And as well, we will obviously discuss the Europa League group draw, which takes place on Friday. So we'll have that for discussion as well as the Fulham game on the preview pod on Patreon. James and I will be here on Monday this week. The schedule allows a regular Monday morning Arscast Extra. And don't forget, we've got a brand new podcast on Patreon as well called The 30, in which myself and Phil Costa do a roundup of all the Premier League news and all the games in 30 minutes. So a little bite-sized podcast chunk for you, talking not so much about Arsenal, but all the other teams. So you can join us for that. Patreon.com/ArsBlog. Fingers crossed for the right result on Saturday evening. For now, thank you as always for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your continued support in everything that we do on ArsBlog. It's hugely appreciated. Have yourselves a great weekend, and we will catch you on the next one. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Hello, is that Arsenal Football Club? Yes, this is Friedrich Twatchlock from Cruffenden United Football Club. Yes, I'm related to the professor. He's my brother. Anyway, we're very interested in one of your players, and we'd like to offer £15 million for him, and we won't pay a penny more. £10 million, you say? And what's the catch? There is no catch. £5 million. Well, I mean, you're driving a very hard bargain here, but who am I to say? £1 million. You'll take £1 million. Well, look, I'm not one to look a gift horse in the... You'll give us some money and pay the player's wages for the duration of his contract? No, his life. His life as a professional footballer. His entire life. In perpetuity, you say? You mean this will pass on from generation to generation until, essentially, the end of time? Well, congratulations, Mr. Gaspar. You've got yourself a deal.